be here. This is a sign of my appreciation to Canada, so I'm speaking for a laser point. So today I'm going to talk about a new model, kind of novel model, for producing the spectrum without intervening the inflation era in the context of string theory. This work has been done by a collaboration of Robert Brandenberger from Hackett University and Kamran Bafa from Harvard. So first I'm going to talk about our goal and our vision, and then I quickly review the Brandenberger-Bafa model, or the so-called string gas cosmology. And then I will talk about the shortcomings of string gas cosmology. Later on, I will move towards the kind of modified model of the string gas cosmology, which is string gas plus a dilatant field. And then I will show you how to embed this string cosmology in the context of statistical mechanics of closed strings. If I get a chance, definitely I want to talk about calculating the power spectrum. And then if I get a chance, I will talk about open strings. And then I'm going to conclude. So our goal is to calculate the fluctuation in, I forgot to turn on this. In the energy of strings, so ultimately we would like to calculate this quantity here, the fluctuation, the mean fluctuation of E squared minus the mean fluctuation squared, which happens to be equal to T squared times the specific heat. So we want to see what this quantity will give us. So it turns out that in this period, we do have a regime which is called the Hagedorn regime, the maximum temperature that that the universe can achieve and the strings can achieve. And then later on, there will be a phase transition from this so-called Hagedorn phase to the radiation-dominated phase. So our goal is to calculate the power spectrum during the Hagedorn phase and see what we'd get from the fluctuation in the Hagedorn first phase in the era of radiation-dominated universe. So Brandenberger-Bafa string cosmology was the first attempt to embed cosmology in string. The interesting feature about this Brandenberger-Bafa cosmology was that they were able to find the behavior of temperature in terms of function of the radius. One big assumption here in their calculation was the universe, the topology of the universe should be compact. So you have a toroidal universe. And in that case, you were able to, so the compactification is very important, then you would get a function of temperature in terms of radius. They were also able to show that the temperature has the so-called T-duality. Namely, if the radius is R, and if R goes to 1 over R, the temperature would be the same. So temperature shows the kind of the jargon that the string theory is used. T-duality, so respect the T-duality stands for target space. But the shortcoming of that cosmology was that the Friedmann equation, both of the Friedmann equations, in fact, were not T-dual under this transformation, or A goes to 1 over A. But they were able to show that the universe is non-singular because of this T-duality. And also, that was perhaps the first attempt to understand why we are living in three large spatial dimensions, but what they call it, decompactification. So out of starting from 10 dimensions, only three of them will grow, and the rest, because of the winding loads of strings, will remain in string state. So this model was mostly based on the statistical mechanics of string rather than the dynamic of string cosmology. But that was, if I want to kind of summarize Brandon Berger Waffle model, I can summarize it in this figure. So what they found is they were able to find temperature versus a scale factor A. This is T versus log A, and they have assumed that, so A is like this. So you can assume that the horizontal axis is mu of T, and when mu goes to 1 over mu, mu goes to minus mu, then of course you have this T duality. Okay? So, and you can see the temperature respects that T duality. Here is the so-called Hagedorn phase. This is the maximum temperature that the universe can achieve. And then later on, there will be a transition from the Hagedorn phase to the radiation phase. So after that, you would have Friedman equations, normal Friedman equations. Okay. So later on, in 1991, Cycling and Waffle tried to understand the dynamics of string cosmology. And they realized, if you look at the low limit energy of type 2 string theories, like with the Dillardson, in which the action looks like this, they were able to find kind of T-dual Friedman equations. So if you look at this action, write it against this background, the flat background, in which d dimensions of that background can expand to very large size, much larger than string scales. And 9 minus d dimensions will remain in string scales. Then you would have the following set of equations. This will reduce to the Friedman equation in the radiation-dominated era. E is the total energy of the system, and P is the pressure in the D direction, and P sub 9 minus D is pressure in the string dimensions, string scale dimensions. So remember here, as I mentioned, A of T is E to the mu of T, and A sub S is E to the mu of T. Later on, I would set mu to 0 because it's not important. We know that 9 minus d dimensions would remain in string scale based on the first paper by Waffle and Vanderbilt. This var phi is not the phi that appeared in the action. The var phi can be related to the original Dillardson phi through this equation. So this is called Mie scale Dillardson field. So for instance, if we have only three large dimensions, let's have mu zero, to be zero, then var phi is simply 2 phi minus 3 mu. I can rewrite these equations in terms of the original Dillardson field. And this would be the first Friedman equation, and this is the second Friedman equation. Forget this because this is zero, ultimately. And this is this equation tells us about the dynamics of the Dillardson field. So you can check for yourself. One trivial solution to these equations is the case when phi is constant, namely phi dot is 0. So phi dot 0 is the trivial solution to these equations. And you can see from here, if phi dot is 0, forget mu dot, what you will get is the first Friedman equation. basically mu dot is same as a dot over a. So you have 3 mu dot squared is equal to the e to the phi rho. Assuming then, in fact, e phi would be related to the g Newton's constant. And the more interesting thing here is that these equations respect this duality here. So now you can check for yourself if mu goes to minus mu and back phi goes to 2 phi minus 3 mu, then under these two transformations, these equations do not change. So they were able to show that dilaton plus gravity can give you a T-dual string cosmology. Also, the other interesting feature of this was the behavior of phi and scale factor A in the Hagedorn phase. In the Hagedorn phase, so as you could see from the previous slide, I said then you set phi to be constant and phi dot is zero, this reduces to the Friedmann equation. That's the end of the Hagedorn phase. So at the end of the Hagedorn phase, the dilaton field will get frozen, and then you will be in the ordinary cosmology, Friedmann cosmology. But what happens if phi dot is not zero? That's the place that you have a Hagedorn-dominated EY condition. And it turns out that phi of t behaves like this, and A of t, or mu of t, behaves like this. So at late times, deeply after the self-dual point, which is kind of correspondent to the Big Bang, you can see e to the phi scales as 1 over t squared. So this is extremely important. This e to the phi is this proportional to the string coupling. So at the late time, string coupling will go to 0, as you can see from this equation. And another feature is that during the Hagedorn phase, A of t is almost constant, which tells you that the Hubble radius is extremely huge. So in the Hagedorn phase, A dot over A is almost infinity. So in the Hagedorn phase, you have a huge, large universe. And then suddenly, when it enters the radiation-dominated era, the Hubble radius shrinks to a normal size. I will have a graph which will show you this feature. But keep this in mind, that the universe in Hagedorn phase is huge. Okay, so this is the classical string cosmology. It's kind of, so this is the pre-bang, Big Bang cosmology. Our case, which I was trying to finish the plot, I didn't get a chance to do that. This is the pre-bang, Big Bang cosmology. In our case, H shrinks to almost zero, and then again, grow up in the radiation dominator, and we follow the rest. So unlike the pre-bang, Big Bang cosmology, in our case, H during the Hagedorn phase approaches zero. So again, also, Seifert and Wappa showed that they would get the same feature that they had in the case of the Brandenburg-Wappa model, but this time with the help of dynamics, not statistical mechanics. So here, again, remember that there is a maximum temperature for universe, TH, so it depends on the energy of the system. You can get closer and closer to the Hagedorn phase, to the Hagedorn temperature. Okay, so now let me switch the gear to the statistical mechanics of string, closed string in this case. Let me remind you there are two approaches to understand the statistical mechanics. One is the microcanonical description, which is, for the case of the string as an extensive object, it is more accurate to use microcanonical description. The fundamental quantity there is density, the total density of states. And this is the summation over all the states. Once you have the total density of states, you can calculate the entropy. Once you have the entropy, you can calculate the temperature, pressure, and the important thing is the specific heat. And our goal was to calculate the specific heat in the Hagedorn regime. Okay? But, of course, there is an alternative approach to understand an ensemble is through the canonical description, which you can see is basically a Laplace transformation of the total density. This only exists when there is a saddle point approximation, and if there is no saddle point, then we are doomed. But no matter, so if there is a saddle point approximation, always there is a correspondence between the microcanonical and canonical description. If this fails, you cannot use that. But on the other hand, if you use this relation, namely the inverse Laplace transformation, and think as the part of z, not as a partition function, but as a mathematical quantity, no matter there is a saddle point approximation or not, you can always do the transfers, inverse Laplace transformation, and that's what we are going to do. We are going to first find this z of beta for the closed strings in the Hagedorn phase, and by doing this inverse Laplace transformation, we would find the total density of states. And the reason is that during whenever you, this description fits particularly for the gravitating systems, because by default, canonical description will give you only positive specific heat, and if there would be a phase transition, you cannot get it by the canonical description, and you have to do it in the microcanonical description. So microcanonical description is more correct approach to understand the feature of string statistical mechanics here. But we are going to use this mathematical tool that z of beta is some mathematical animal, which we will do the inverse Laplace transformation to find the total density of states. And once we find omega of e, like the previous slide, we can find all the thermodynamical features. And then we will be able to find the specific heat as well. Okay? So now let's see what we can say about the statistical mechanics of an ideal string gas. Again, remember that a string is an extensive object, so it's different from a particle. For a particle, entropy scales like e to the power of the dimension of spacetime. D is only the number of spatial dimensions. But unlike particle, the entropy of string is directly proportional to the entropy. So there are some interesting features about differences between the string as an extensive object and a particle as a point object. So this is the way we approach this problem. We are going to assume that the universe consists of many, many blocks. And each size of these cubic blocks is Hubble radius, and we are going to consider that in each block, the maximum energy that the system can, or the system of strings, closed strings can achieve would be E1. In each block of size R, in which R now, this R is much larger than the string scale, and much smaller than the Hubble radius, and the reason is that as you remember, A of t during the Hagedorn phase was almost constant. So we are in kind of quasi-static situation. So it is perfectly fine to use thermodynamics here. And also, we want to look at the ensemble average of these blocks here. So for us, delta E or delta rho would be the difference between each of these blocks. So in each block, we have isotropic and homogeneous universe. So in each block, we have this situation here. We want to consider the statistical mechanics of closed strings here. Okay. Now, there are many ways to understand this. I found this is the easiest way to understand the statistical mechanics of the closed strings. Let's assume that we can kind of assume that the closed string is like a random walk, in which the bulk of the this number of string in the random walk comes from e to the beta h epsilon. Epsilon is the energy of the inside the closed string, in which beta h is the inverse of the so-called the Heidelberg temperature. Now, so the density of state, the bulk of the density of state comes from this exponential factor, and there would be some corrections, of course, due to the volume of the walk. And since any point on the string can be considered as a new point to start your random walk, you would get 1 over epsilon correction. And also there would be another correction, which is due to the total volume of space.
Question?
Sure.
They don't have any kinetic energy in the strings? I mean, all the, you're assuming that all the energy is in the
winding moment.
Yeah.
That's right. So the winding moments are the dominant moments in this case.
Do you know that or you assume that?
No, it is. The reason is that because the universe is so huge, and remember the momentum modes scale as n over r, so r is huge, so those are subdominant to the winding modes. So the total. Something like that. So this is, r is huge, as I mentioned to you. So this is subdominant to this one.
But couldn't it just be very exciting? Could you have the ordinary modes just very excited? R is huge, but n could be huge too. And there, as n becomes big, you have exponentially more such things.
Sure, that's true. But you would see that here we only consider the 0 and the 1 case, so n is not that huge. So in fact, we are doing the 0 modes plus the first mode.
Right, but that's my question. I mean, if I actually made an ensemble of strings at the Hagedorn temperature, given that the density of states is exponential, why, just for ordinary, not winding modes, for ordinary modes, why do you think that a dominant state would be a long string wound around many times rather than a short string highly excited?
No, you can see that it could be a mixture of all of them. And I'm not going to assume anything for the moment, but you would see that the most of the contribution comes from a very long string. Okay, so then you can have two different situations here, depends on the energy of the system. And this is, so it is interesting that the statistical mechanics of closed string depends on the topology of space. If you have a compact space, it's kind of correspondent to a random walk in which, your length of your random walk is much larger than the energy of the string, then the volume of the walk would be scaled as energy to the power of the spatial dimensions divided by half. So, in other words, the density of singular string would look like this if the universe is non-compact. So if the universe is non-compact, you see some spatial dimensional dependence in the density of state. But if all of the strings are, the energy of the system is quite low, then you wouldn't see any dimensional dependence. It's independent of number of spatial dimensions, and thus the density of the state looks like this equation, like that, and it's much easier than that one. So now we want to calculate the total density because we want to find the entropy, and from entropy we would be able to find the specific heat once we have the entropy. So if I write the partition function as exponential of another object, C of beta, which looks like the free energy in the one loop calculations, then Z of beta is inverse Laplace transformation of the singular string density of state. And this has many poles, infinite number of poles, and depends on how large the size of the universe is, how large R is. You have many, many number of singularities in the complex plane. So there would be singularities like this in the complex beta plane, in which the first one would be correspondent to the Hydrogen inverse of the hydrogen temperature, beta H. And the regular part would look like this, which is this A is just like number density times the volume. D now is the total number of space-time. This looks like the so-called hydrogen energy density, and times beta minus beta I. Okay. Now, since you want to demand a specific heat to be positive, there would be some restrictions on the total number of space-time. It turns out that if you want to have a positive specific heat, the total number of space-time should be larger than 4. If it's smaller than 2, you could have, it depends on the energy of the system, you can have either positive or negative specific heat. So to summarize, the partition function Z for the closed strings looks like 1 over beta minus beta H times the regular part of partition function. So the interesting thing is that based on what I wrote here, if you look at, so in the complex plane, if this is the complex beta plane, imagine the beta, and this is real beta. So the first singularity is the so-called beta H. And the next to the beta H singularity is called beta 1, beta 2, so on and so forth. And you want to do the inverse Laplace transformation on this complex plane. So again, this depends on how large is the universe. So if R is large, if R is not large, to the first approximation, you have only the contribution from beta H. If R is large enough, then you have to calculate the contribution from beta 1. If you want to, you want R to be as large as possible, you have to include all the contributions. So for the moment, we are stopping here. So we are only calculating the contribution from the first singularity to the beta H. So beta H minus beta 1 would be kind of, as you can see, would depend on the geometry of space time. It depends on 1 over R squared, and that's crucial. The total density of states now looks like this. So this was the first correction. If you didn't contribute the beta 1 singularity, and if you just consider the green equation, the entropy would look like exactly as beta H times E, as I mentioned to you. But this is the contribution coming from the first singularity. And this 1 over R squared is completely independent of number of space time. It's always 1 over R squared in any number of dimensions. And that turns out to be crucial here. Because, as you will later on see, it is only in 3 plus 1 dimensions that you would get the scale invariant power spectrum. So now I want to look at delta omega 1, the contribution coming from delta omega 1 in the entropy. If I do that, so this would be the corrections. As I mentioned to you previously, if you ignore other contributions, entropy would scale like E, unlike the particles. Here are the corrections. For particles, you have volume dependence. Here you have this contribution from delta omega 1. So now, having the entropy, you can calculate the temperature through this equation. It's basically the derivative of entropy with respect to the mean energy. So you can see here again this beta H minus beta 1 appears. And remember, beta H minus beta 1 is proportional to 1 over R squared. Now, what I want to do is to calculate the correlation function. And that's the tool I have prescribed. And so the correlation function can be thought of as delta T mu times delta T sigma lambda, in which is T mu T sigma lambda average. This is like T squared minus average T times average T. So exactly what I said is like T squared minus E squared. So that's kind of generalization of what we have there. And G is our the metric in the background. So once you have the partition function, you will be able to find the correlation function. And that's the definition of delta T mu. So what is T mu? The average of T mu itself is this object here. Okay? So for the moment, I'm going to consider only the 0, 0, 0, 0 components of the correlation function. But later on, we'll see the contribution of this to the tensor mode as well. Okay? So again, if we divide the universe to those blocks, and assuming that the size of those blocks are much larger than the string scale and smaller than the Hubble radius, and now compactify on a Euclidean time. Now the Euclidean time would look like this. Then the 0, 0, 0 components of the correlation function would be like delta rho squared, which is the average of rho squared minus the average of the density squared, which turns out to be, if you look at the Euclidean time, compact Euclidean time, it turns out to be like, and this is important, T squared over R to the 6 times CV. You can check that dimensionality is correct, it's 1 over R to the 8 times the specific heat. So if I find specific heat, in fact, I've been able to find delta rho squared. So since I have found the entropy, it is now easy to find this specific heat. And it turns out the specific heat scales as R squared. Or the correlation function would scale as 1 over R to the 4. Okay? And I want you to remember this 1 over the R to the 4 scaling, because that's important here. Okay? Now, how can I match this with cosmology is just look at the fluctuation metric of this side. If you look at only the longitudinal perturbation, phi is a fluctuation in the metric. And since our universe is much, it's below the Hubble radius, the dominant contribution would be from the Poisson equation. So delta squared phi would be 4 pi g delta rho. So since I have done the calculation for delta rho, I would be able to find the power spectrum for phi. And it's like this. So this is the inverse of the Hubble radius, if you wish. If you look at two modes, this is the Hagedorn phase, T sub r is the line that shows that you have a phase transition from Hagedorn phase to radiation-dominated phase. For instance, if you compare this with the picture that you have from inflation, we know that in inflation, so this part is the same, but during the inflation, the size of the Hubble radius is constant, and then you have modes like this. So if you rotate for 90 degrees, the bottom of this graph would be like the inflation amount. So if you have two modes, K1 and K2, they exhibit the hover radius at some Ti of K1 and Ti of K2, and then again they re-enter the hover radius at some later time in the radiation dynamics. So everything above T sub R is the radiation dominated evil. So this is, it is huge. So this is when you are approaching the, when H shrinks. H inverse shrinks to a very small size.
But the dotted line is during the magnitude.
This is, exactly. This is near the phase transition. So this is the place when the universe was extremely huge. And then when you approach the radiation dominated phase, it shrinks drastically. And then after that, it will be just ordinary, for example, some water. Okay? So if I look at the Poisson equation in the Fourier space, I can define a power spectrum for the phi, which is k cubed times phi of k squared. And remember, phi of k can be related to the delta rho squared through the Poisson equation. So it would be 16 pi squared g squared k to the minus 4 delta rho squared. And remember, delta rho squared that I found from the specific D was related to r as 1 over r to the 4 or k to the 4. So that k to the 4 cancels k to the minus 4 here, and that's what you get. And it's a scale invariant power spectrum. Okay? So remember again, the delta rho squared that I found was proportional to 1 over r to the 4, which is like k to the 4. So that k to the 4 cancels k to the minus 4 here that comes from Poisson equation. Because on the other hand, we have this delta squared phi, which was 4 pi g delta rho. So phi squared is proportional to k to the minus 4 delta rho sub k squared. So k to the minus 4 cancels k to the 4, and then you get the scaling by the power spectrum. Another interesting feature here, which is missing in legendary models, is that for the amplitude, you wouldn't get any length scale there. Here, naturally, you would see the length scale appear. So you have two length scales here. One is the Planck length scale, and the other one is the string scale, coming from alpha prime. Alpha prime, in fact, square root of alpha prime is Ls, the string scale. And as you can see from here, you get this prefactor as the amplitude of the perturbations here. And if you want to be compatible with observations, this has to be like 10 to the minus 12, and therefore Lp over Ls should be like 10 to the minus 3. At the same time, Lp over Ls is, in fact, nothing but G sub S, the string coupling constant. And G sub S is nothing but e to the phi, the Dillerson field that we started. So we are in a in the weak limit of string coupling. We started, all the calculations were based on that. And again, we found out by observation that R coupling, so it's a kind of consistency check here, that G sub S should be much smaller than 1. So, and that's a good assumption that the string length is about 1,000 times larger than the Planck length. And interestingly, this factor also appears for the tensor bonds.
I have a nice question. So the last factor, though, the 1 minus T over TH,
yes,
that you would assume is what?
So this...
That divergence is T.
Right, right. So you can get... Okay, there are some shortcomings here. For the moment, no one understands exactly what happens during the phase transition. Dynamically you understand through Bach-Poisson equations. But you don't understand the statistical mechanics of this transition. How this transition happened, we don't know exactly. So you're right, so you see there's some, and it is kind of compatible with the picture that we have for a string. Near the phase transition, strings vibrate a lot. The other interesting feature, as you can see, this is always positive. So unlike, so there are some important assumptions here. If you assume that the space-time is not compact, you would get negative specific heat. What is the meaning of that? We really don't know. Maybe it's the alarm of a phase transition or a kind of, you know, thermodynamical instability. But in this case, we want to approach as much T approaches to TH as much as we could. Like, you know, it's this T over TH is like 10 to the minus 12, something like that. Sorry, 1 plus 10 to the correction is 10 to the minus 12. Okay. So let me conclude here. So we are working on two more papers, hopefully will appear by end of this month. We have done the calculation for this tensor modes. And it is interesting that we found almost the same feature for the tensor modes. Namely, again, we found scaling variant power spectrum for the tensor modes. So this is compatible with the inflationary scenario. But the ratio of tensor modes to scalar modes is much higher than what inflation predicts usually. So that's another interesting feature which could falsify our theory for inflation, for that matter. And the other interesting feature is that we have neglected the fluctuation in dilaton fields. So we now check that whether, if you look at the fluctuation in dilaton field, whether that affects the fluctuation in strings, and it turns out that you can ignore, it's always subdominant to the fluctuation of the strings themselves. So we were safe. And the reason that we assume that we can neglect the fluctuation in dilaton field was that, as I showed you in one of the earlier slides, the dilaton field is scaled as 1 over e to the phi was scaled as 1 over t squared. So, and it was shown by Sartin and Bafa that phi that equals 0 is an attractor. So no matter from where you start, always you will move towards phi that equals 0. So that was the reason that in this calculation we ignored the fluctuation in the dilaton field. And we have now shown that even if you include that, it is a subdominant factor. Also, one more thing that we have done was the running of the power spectrum. Whether this n here runs with k, so that also turns out to be proportional to this ratio, LPL over LS. So far, for the running of the spectrum, for the amplitude of the tensor modes, for the amplitude of the scalar modes, we found this interesting ratio of L PL over L sub S.
Do you mean running, or you just mean NS, the deviation from 1?
The deviation from 1, yes. So I'm talking about this. This one.
No, that's the running, but here it's the way you written it, it's completely scalar there.
It is. No, but so remember? Okay. So let's look at this picture again. When they exit the hover radius here, and then they enter the hover radius, they pick up, you know, it's kind of tilted towards the red spectrum. You know, because we have to calculate it at a later time. Mm-hmm. So there would be small tilts towards the red. And then we wanted to see how big is that tilt. And it turns out, again, it's very small. Because we just calculated the spectrum when they exit from here. And it is completely scaling rate. The other assumption they made, and we are not sure still that whether that assumption is correct or not.
You calculate the spectrum on very small scales, meanwhile the bubble radius is very large. And
yes.
You find that that spectrum is nearly scalar variant. Then you say, when at the end of this hexagonal phase, all of a sudden the bubble radius will shrink tremendously, and somehow the power spectrum you calculated doesn't change.
Exactly.
But that's the part I have a hard time understanding. Normally, in inflation, for example, it's precisely the fact that the most the spectrum changes a lot by the time from the time the modes are well outside the horizon to the time they exist. But in your case, you want to explain somehow that.
Maybe the reason I think maybe the reason is that what you are doing in inflation is that you are considering the quantum fluctuation instead. Here we are just assuming the thermal fluctuations. But we have to I have to admit that we don't know the details of this mechanism yet. So there are many things we are trying to improve our calculations. But for the moment, that would be my answer. Perhaps, maybe this is the reason. So, also, the other thing that we have assumed here is that...
It has nothing to do with the fact that it's quantum or not, right? Because it's just the second order differential equation for the perturbation. Then you specify some initial dependence.
Right.
You evolve it as it's true that in inflation you think of you motivate the original spectrum by the fact that these aren't quantum fluctuations. But if I didn't know this, I could determine the speed of the absolute wave and specify some initial spectrum that it evolved in. And typically the k dependence changes completely.
Can you remind me why does this happen in inflation? Forgot that.
Oh, it's just the.
But in inflation you are looking at the super horizon zones, right?
Yeah, well you start to solve the differential equation, you impose, so the second order differential equation you must impose boundary condition, and the way you do it is you impose boundary condition when the mode is well inside the horizon.
Okay.
So some k dependence, which indeed is motivated by the fact that the yeah, inflation would say, well, when the modes go inside the horizon, just take the usual spectrum in the Kalski space. But then you solve the equation and you realize that, and then you ask the question, what is the spectrum when the mode is now well outside the horizon?
Right.
And you went from something far from scale invariant originally, but.
I don't know. Let me think about that. I really don't know, but one thing you should notice here is that, unlike inflation, here A is constant, while in inflation A also is a function of time.
Right. I'm worried about the part.
So you're worried about this part?
No, I'm worried about the part where that line when the mode is exiting.
Exactly this one.
Yeah.
Right. So at that time there are scaling variants. What we are looking at the tilt is that when they re-enter the hypervisors, because now A would be a function of time, and we have to look at the transform function from there. So we also have assumed that that the perturbation theory also is applicable in the hexagonal phase. So we are not sure whether we can do that or not. And also we have assumed as far as the equation of state outside this hypervisor is. Less than, it's larger than minus one, then you can use this Born gauge invariant phi, and that's what we have done. So at the end, you would get this scalar invariant spectrum, like this as an image. So let me conclude. So in this scenario, which was basically based on statistical mechanics of closed streams, we calculated the evolution of these fluctuations, the thermal fluctuations here, and I have to repeat this. And the universe has started with a quasi-static era, so there is no inflation in this case. The strings fluctuation, the strings fluctuate in this era, and it turns out the fluctuations are scalenly. And as I mentioned to you, these are only subject to the case of 3 plus 1 dimensions. If you go to the higher dimensions, because your specific heat always scales as 1 over, scales as r squared, no matter in what number of dimensions you are, always is like that. So in higher dimensions, you would get k dependence. So again, here, being in universe with 3 large spatial dimensions is important. One. The second thing is that, so this is as far as the geometry is concerned. Also, the topology of the universe should be such that you can be in a compact universe. Okay, so again, in order to compute the spectrum, as I mentioned to you, for the metric fluctuations at the rate times, we have used the general techniques in general relativity. And so that has to be, be studied in much more details because, when dilaton is not constant, when it's not fixed, you are in a string frame and you have to be kind of careful about the applications of GR there. As I mentioned again to Justin, we have also assumed that this metric fluctuation beyond this hover radius is constant, it's not changing with time. But again, based on our assumption that we can use GR in this model as well. So, although so far we have shown that this string, yeah, in the context of string gas cosmology, in the era of the Hagedorn phase, you can produce scalar invariant thermal fluctuations, which is one of the most successful outcome of inflation. We have not addressed the flatness problem, which inflation does. So this is one shortcoming of this problem. But compared to many other shortcomings of inflation, I guess we are safe that we haven't done that. We are thinking about that, but maybe there is no solution to that. But the universe starts to be really, really large in our case. And as I mentioned to you, we now found that this process also gives you a scaling invariant spectrum for tensor modes. So our future hopes here, which is kind of, should be updated, as I mentioned, because we have improved since I wrote these slides. So one thing is what kind of observational evidence we can find for this string cosmology is one, for instance, the large ratio of tensor to scalar models that we see here, unlike the inflation models. And the question of Gaussianity here, we checked that whether our distribution is Gaussian or not. It turns out that it is Gaussian, so it's perfectly Gaussian distribution. So there is no Gaussianity in this case. If non-Gaussianity observed in this model will be ruled out. And so let me stop here and see whether there are other questions that I can answer. Thanks for your patience. And
I have some naive questions. And maybe they'll just show my ignorance. Is anything that you've done use the assumption that the strings are critical?
Oh, yes, very good. Thank you very much. Yeah, we have assumed that the string are critical.
Where do you assume that?
In the action, here at the beginning. So let me show you the action. Here, if the strings were not critical, there would be a factor like C, which shows the criticality of string, and that depends on the number of the compact space dimensions. So that, we have assumed that C is zero.
just in your discussion of the classical cosmology.
Yes.
But in the counting actual statistical mechanics, you didn't assume that the strings have no critical.
Exactly. Again, there also we have assumed that the strings.
You have. So
yes,
if
we
have critical strings, the counting would be statistically different.
I think so. That's another thing we want to do. In fact, that's one of the future plans to look what happens if the strings are non-critical. Because Vaha and Saiken also, here I didn't mention the non-critical strings, but they also discussed the non-critical string, and they looked at the string cosmology of non-critical string cosmology. But here, for our case, we again assume that the strings are critical. So another interesting subject would be to see what kind of differences would be when strings are not critical.
Okay, so just a couple more. So this is very nice. So the strings are, so there are the three large dimensions in string cosmology, and it's the
winding
six, the winding modes go around the six.
Right, four. Right.
Okay, and you're counting the winding modes going around the small direction.
Exactly.
Six torus. Okay, and what was the R, the scale which is in between the string scale and the Hubble scale? That doesn't come into the final answer, but is it just something for purposes of counting? And what is the physical meaning of R, capital R?
Well, capital R, as I mentioned to you, this always a scale. This 1 over R to the 4, it happens to be, because remember, what you have here was like this. It was T squared over R to the 6 CV. This CV is...
I'm asking one, what is the physical meaning of R?
R is the size of the each of these blocks, which is R. Homogeneous part of the universe, if you watch.
Is that something which just comes into your calculation for counting purposes, or does it have a physical meaning?
Well, it comes from, if you remember, no, the beta complex plane I drew for you. So the contribution comes from the first singularity you would see, it is beta H. In the complex plane.
I'm sorry, I think it's the physical size of both these interests. In other words, the wave number.
No. So this is the largest size that we are assuming that the universe can be still isotropic and homogeneous.
So I mean, you have this picture in which, roughly speaking, there was one excited string within each box of size R. But
right.
That was not literal, presumably, was it?
No, it was not.
Yeah. So
it was not. So if that R controls, as I mentioned to you, the number of singularities that you have to include.
That's the character. I'm just trying to understand. Okay, and I think I got enough.
But physically, as I mentioned to you, this R tells you the criterion for you to understand that at what level the universe is still homogeneous and isotropic. So below that level, the universe is... So let me show you this picture here. Maybe that would be...
So, but let me just ask my follow-up then. So, I mean, so roughly speaking, the winding, the energy is in the winding modes in the edge.
Exactly.
And in three-dimensional space, it's sort of within a scale of R.
Right.
So, and you can get, because of the Hagedorn, because of the exponential density of states, you can get actually a lot of energy and a lot of entropy.
That's true.
To a little region of three-dimensional space by making use of excited and blinding.
Exactly.
That's what you're doing.
Exactly.
But are you sure you don't collapse to a black hole? Are you sure in three-dimensional space you don't have more energy than would satisfy the condition that you have a black hole? Because for a black hole, the density of states goes like the exponential of the energy squared.
Yeah, but
which is much faster than.
Maybe I'm wrongly, but don't you get negative specific heat for the black holes?
That's one of the things I'm worried about.
But we don't get negative specific heat here.
But
and that was the thing we wanted to avoid, to get negative specific heat, and that's the reason that we kind of put constraints in our equation that always we would get positive specific heat.
But there's still just a simple condition that if within a region bounded by something of area R squared, I have more energy than a certain amount. Classically, it's going to, in three-dimensional space, want to have a horizon.
Right.
So are you sure you don't exceed that?
I guess I'm sure about that.
Okay.
But for more complicated pictures, as I mentioned to you, if you want to kind of generalize this to the case when the universe is non-compact, you would get regions in which CV is negative. And I don't know what the meaning of the negativeness of the specific heat would be in those regions, in this context at least. And maybe in those cases, we would have this primordial black holes, let's say. And since we don't have inflation to get rid of those black holes, perhaps that would be a real challenge and problem for this model.
I just have one more. I can't understand why you say this picture is red.
I said after they, because this T in general is a function of time, right? So let me again show you the final result. So T in general is a function of time, or A. Mm-hmm. So that's the reason I'm telling you that. So during the Hagedorn phase, this T is a function of A, but A also is constant. But then in the radiation-dominated case, A is not constant, so there would be some tilt towards red. Because now, in that case, T, which is a function of, let's say, T of K for each mode, then exactly, T is decreasing. I mean, A is decreasing. A is like T to the 1/2, right? I mean, temperature is decreasing. T is like 1 over A in the case of radiation. So that's the reason.
Okay, well, let's thank Ali again.
Thank you.